There are times when fear is good. It must keep its watchful place at the heart's control. Welcome to A Walk Within, a show where we visit a short story from around the world and revisit my life experiences invoked by it to explore the parallels between the two and find newer meanings. I'm Anoop, and in today's episode, we will explore a short story, The Goblin of Adachigahara, from Japanese fairy tales compiled by Yei Theodora Ozaki, and my personal memory of summoning a spirit to see how fear is good. Before we start, I want to thank all the listeners for their continuous support of the show. Please share the show with anyone who you think will enjoy it. It is greatly appreciated. As always, let's start with the story once we are back. This is an edited version of the story. The link to the original story is available in the show notes below. One day, as the sun was setting, a priest came to the plain called Adachigahara in the province of Mutsu in Japan. He was a belated traveler, and his robe showed that he was a Buddhist pilgrim, walking from shrine to pray for some blessing or to crave for forgiveness of sins. He had apparently lost his way, and as it was late, he met no one who could show him the road or warn him of the haunted spot. He had walked the whole day and was now tired and hungry. And the evenings were chilly, for it was late autumn, and he began to be very anxious to find some house where he could obtain a night's lodging. He found himself lost in the midst of the large plain and looked about in vain for some sign of human habitation. At last, after wandering about for some hours, he saw a clump of trees in the distance, and through the trees he caught sight of the glimmer of a single ray of light. He exclaimed with joy,
"Oh, surely that is some cottage where I can get a night's lodging."
Keeping the light before his eyes, he dragged his weary, aching feet as quickly as he could towards the spot and soon came to a miserable-looking little cottage. As he drew near, he saw that it was in a tumble-down condition. The bamboo fence was broken and weed and grass pushed their way through the gaps. The paper screen, which serve as windows and doors in Japan, were full of holes, and the posts of the house were bent with age and seemed scarcely able to support the old thatched roof. The hut was open, and by the light of an old lantern, an old woman sat industriously spinning. The pilgrim called to her across the bamboo fence and said,
"Oba-san, good evening. I am a traveler. Please excuse me, but I have lost my way and do not know what to do, for I have nowhere to rest tonight. I beg you to be good enough to let me spend the night under your roof."
The old woman, as soon as she heard herself spoken to, stopped spinning, rose from her seat, and approached the intruder.
"I am very sorry for you. You must indeed be distressed to have lost your way in such a lonely spot so late at night. Unfortunately, I cannot put you up, for I have no bed to offer you and no accommodation whatsoever for a guest in this poor place."
"Oh, that does not matter. All I want is a shelter under some roof for the night. And if you will be good enough just to let me lie on the kitchen floor, I shall be grateful." I'm too tired to walk further tonight, so I hope you will not refuse me. Otherwise, I shall have to sleep out on the cold plain."
And in this way, he pressed the old woman to let him stay. She seemed reluctant, but at last she said,
"Very well, I will let you stay here. I can offer you a very poor welcome only, but come in now and I will make a fire, for the night is cold."
The pilgrim was only too glad to do as he was told. He took off his sandals and entered the hut. The old woman then bought some sticks of wood and lit the fire and bade her guest draw near and warm himself.
"You must be hungry after your long tramp. I will go and cook some supper for you."
She then went to the kitchen to cook some rice. After the priest had finished his supper, the old woman sat down by the fireplace and they talked together for a long time. The pilgrim thought to himself that he had been very lucky to come across such a kind, hospitable old woman. At last, the wood gave out, and as the fire died slowly down, he began to shiver with cold, just as he had done when he arrived.
"I see you are cold. I will go out and gather some wood, for we have used it all. You must stay and take care of the house while I'm gone."
"No, no. Let me go instead, for you are old and I cannot think of letting you go out to get wood for me this cold night."
The old woman shook her head and said,
"You must stay quietly here, for you are my guest."
Then she left him and went out. In a minute she came back and said,
"You must sit where you are and not move. And whatever happens, do not go near or look into the inner room. Now mind what I tell you."
"If you tell me not to go near the back room, of course I won't,"
said the priest, rather bewildered. The old woman then went out again, and the priest was left alone. For the first time that night, he began to feel that he was in a weird place. And the old woman's word,
"And whatever happens, do not go near or look into the inner room,"
aroused his curiosity and his fear. What hidden thing could be in that room that she did not wish him to see? For some time, the remembrance of his promise to the old woman kept him still, but at last, he could no longer resist his curiosity to peep into the forbidden place. As the minutes went slowly by and the old woman did not return, he began to feel more and more frightened, and to wonder what dreadful secret was in the room behind him. He must find out.
"She will not know what I have looked unless I tell her. I will just have a peep before she comes back."
With these words, he got up and began to move slowly towards the back room and stealthily crept towards the forbidden spot. With trembling hands, he pushed back the sliding door and looked in. What he saw froze the blood in his veins. The room was full of dead men's bones and the walls were splashed and the floor was covered with human blood. In one corner, skull upon skull rose to the ceiling. In another was a heap of arm bones. In another, a heap of leg bones. The sickening smell made him faint. He fell backwards with horror and for some time lay in a heap with fright on the floor, a pitiful sight. He trembled all over and his teeth chattered and he could hardly crawl away from the dreadful spot.
"How horrible! What awful den have I come to in my travels? May Buddha help me or I'm lost. Is it possible that that kind old woman is really the cannibal goblin? When she comes back, she will show herself in her true character and eat me up at one mouthful.
With these words, his strength came back to him, and snatching up his hat and staff, he rushed out of the house as fast as his legs could carry him. Out into the night, he ran, his one thought to get as far as he could from the goblin's haunt. He had not gone far away when he heard steps behind him and a voice crying.
Stop! Stop!
He ran on, redoubling his speed, pretending not to hear. As he ran, he heard the steps behind him come nearer and nearer. And at last, he recognized the old woman's voice, which grew louder and louder as she came nearer.
Stop! Stop, you wicked man! Why did you look into the forbidden room?
The priest quite forgot how tired he was, and his feet flew over the ground faster than ever. Fear gave him strength, for he knew that if the goblin caught him, he would soon be one of her victims. With all his heart, he repeated the prayer to Buddha.
Namo Amida Butsu, Namo Amida Butsu.
And after him rushed the dreadful old hag, her hair flying in the wind and her face changing with the rage into the demon that she was. In her hand, she carried a large blood-stained knife, and she still shrieked after him. At last, when the priest felt he could run no more, the dawn broke, and with the darkness of the night, the goblin vanished and he was safe. The priest now knew that he had met the goblin of Adachigahara, the story of whom he had often heard but never believed to be true. He felt that he owed his wonderful escape to the protection of Buddha, to whom he had prayed for help. He then set forward for another part of the country, only too glad to leave the haunted plain behind him. But the goblin is still there. Before we go to my memory, let's hear a message from one of our show's friends.
Hello, and welcome to the Realm of Unknown. My name is Shane, and I shall be your guide along this strange adventure, into a world all its own, filled to the brim with wonders and mysteries. A podcast that focuses on all things paranormal and supernatural. Join me, your host, each week as we dive deep into unique stories and legends about the unexplained and strange from all around the globe. You can find Realm of Unknown on all your favorite podcast listening platforms such as Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, and more. So come join us and take part in our next journey into the Realm of Unknown.
This memory has a group of four characters. The desperate, the close one, the enabler, and the supporter. I've chosen these names for the show to hide real names, but also to underscore the driving emotions of these individuals. We were about 18 or 19 years old, and unlike most our contemporaries, we really wanted to become rich in a very short time. In one of the usual meetings at a tea shop, the enabler started talking about how someone that he knew found a pot of gold while digging in the land that they recently bought.
Man, this is what you call luck. I don't know if we'll ever have such luck,
commented the desperate.
No. They bought that specific land because they knew it would have gold buried in it, explained the enabler.
Nah, you're yanking our chain. Why don't you find someone else to make fool of?
Said the supporter.
No, really. I know it for a fact. My uncle told me about it before buying the land. You can choose to believe it or not, but that does not change the fact.
If that's true, why didn't you buy the piece of land and got the gold before him?
I don't have money to buy the land, even if I know it will have gold.
Well, if I know where the gold is, I will take a loan from the local loan shark just to buy the land and sell it swiftly as soon as I get the gold to repay the loan.
The desperate was serious. This gave the enabler a pause and he said, "It is a good idea, and if you guys want, we can think of doing it."
"Come on, who's going to tell us if there is gold buried in some random piece of land? And if they somehow know where, why won't they get it themselves instead tell us?"
The enabler had a smirk on his face. "People who don't need it anymore. The dead people."
"Have you lost it? I think it's time we go home and specially avoid the enabler. He has lost it."
"Hold on. What do you mean? Tell us what is your plan."
"See, my uncle told me about this. He learned this method from his guru about summoning good spirits of old rich people, who then guide them to the places where they hid the gold, as this was the custom in old times. He has a shop near where you live, Mr. Supporter. Where do you think all this money came from, huh? He practically became rich in last 5 to 8 years from a small shop."
"But why would he tell you all this? Sharing the secret with you?"
inquired the close one.
"Well, what can I say? He trusts me and wants me to attain a good place in society too."
"Regardless, we need to try. We need to learn this method. I don't want my life to be a 9-to-5 thing forever."
There was a moment of silence. That last line was really powerful. We started sipping the tea and looked at each other wondering, "So what comes next?"
"I will talk to my uncle and let you guys know tomorrow."
Few days went by.
"Well, did you learn it?"
"Yes. We need you, the close one, to draw something as you are good in drawings. Buy 2-3 large drawing sheets and I will tell you what you need to draw. The supporter will need to bring the incense sticks and a small steel bowl. And after that, we will need a place to sit where we are not disturbed."
We bought the stuff as directed and now gathered again at the tea shop. At this time, the supporter had 3 major and critical questions. Question number 1. How does it work? Meaning, what exactly are we doing? Question number 2. Where are we going to sit to do this? And the third question, who are we summoning from spirit world, as we do not know any rich spirit? The enabler explained, "On the chart we made, we will put the steel bowl. We will then put our fingers on the bowl and summon a good spirit. Once it arrives, we will ask it a question about themselves to know if it's the right spirit. The spirit will answer by moving the bowl to different section of the chart and we will know it's them. And then similarly, ask them about a place where the gold or money is hidden."
He basically explained Ouija board replacing planchette with steel bowl.
He continued, "We will go to old fort ruins in the evening and we will invite the king's spirit to guide us to gold."
It made total sense. There was a common knowledge that the king was a very good man, but the thought of getting a wrong spirit our way, and that too in an old fort ruins, was too scary and too Ramsey Brothers for us. For those who don't know, Ramsey Brothers made cult Bollywood horror movies mainly in 70s and 80s decade. The group agreed to move forward. We found a corner in the old fort. The supporter lit the incense. We were sitting next to each other and looking at enabler for the instructions. The enabler closed his eyes, muttered something, and then sat next to 2 terrified and 1 determined soul. He said, "Now we all need to place our index finger on the small bowl and start thinking about the king, and you need to use this chant.
O king, please come to us. The obedient voices started to grow.
O king, please come to us. O king, please come to us.
With eyes closed, the chant echoing and the smell of incense, we truly started to believe that we will get a spirit. Simultaneously, the thought of accidentally calling a bad spirit and its resulting chaos started seeping fear in our hearts and our minds. All of a sudden, the bowl moved. Our heart stopped, and before I could hear the last heartbeat, we heard a scream. It was the supporter. He ran away from the corner, leaving the enabler, the desperate, and the closed one shocked, who themselves were scared to death. Everyone rushed behind him. The thought of him being possessed by a demon spirit was bone-chilling. Thankfully for us, he ran back to his house, where we found him to be in perfectly fine health. But he said, "I'm too scared to do this, and I'd rather die in poverty than by a ghost." We all agreed that this is too dangerous, and we are meddling with the powers that we do not understand. And then we did not try again.
So why did we all agree to participate in this stupid and dangerous activity? Our brain uses fear to keep us alive. This feeling is controlled by the amygdala, an almond-shaped component of our brain. It is in charge of our natural reaction to the environment around us, particularly to the things that could harm us. For example, we get scared in a horror movie. It's because we are perceiving that in some way, our own well-being is under threat. Our brain lets us forget that what we are seeing is not real, and our body responds to the fear. This is all being done by the amygdala. Fear helps us stay in the present moment and to focus. And due to this very fact, fear is related to certain behaviors as well as how it develops into act of kindness and good deeds. For example, empathy and the ability to recognize fear are closely linked because empathy is a result of where your focus lies. Abigail Marsh, in her wonderful book, The Fear Factor, demonstrated it by conducting an experiment where participants were asked to listen to a radio interview. Katie, a woman who had lost both her parents and was responsible for her younger siblings, was the subject of the interview. She worked multiple jobs while also studying for her college degree. Some participants were asked to focus on the technical facts of Katie's tale before listening to the interview, while the rest were asked to focus on and identify the emotions Katie was exhibiting. Following that, the author requested if anyone wanted to send money to Katie. According to the findings, those who were instructed to focus on Katie's feeling donated more than those who were encouraged to focus on technical facts. In the end, while fear as an emotion has a bad reputation, but the truth is that fear also allows individuals to feel empathy and perform altruistic acts. So next time, when you are scared, be thankful, as it has a potential to do good. That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. The link to the story, few wonderful articles on the topic, along with all the music and sound effects used in this episode is available in the show notes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, stay as awesome as you are.